south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, how about a little cost of living report from way off the Gringo Tourist Trail? Kind of an update, haven't done this in a while. Well, I went to one of those massive outdoor markets a couple days ago. You know, some of them are so big you could get lost in them. I mean, scary lost, too. By the way, there's always little guys walking around with a little rope coiled around their shoulder and a little square sponge pad or cushion, about the size of a smartphone. So what's that for? I'll tell you in a second. Anyway, when one of these guys spots you, he'll walk right up to you and say, ¿Lleva tus cosas? Meaning, can I carry your stuff? And of course, that's their job. That's what they do all day. That's the moment you ask them what they're going to charge you to carry all your stuff through the market and back to your car in the parking lot. Now, if you go to the market the way I do, about twice a month, you're carrying a lot of stuff each time. And of course, I've got four or five very heavy-duty reusable bags. Yep, those things last forever. You can buy them right there in the market for around 50 cents each. And you know when they get munged up, and they will, because you're setting them down and putting produce in and out. Stuff does spill, get smashed, leaks, all part of going to the market, you know? No problem. When you get home, you could throw them in your washing machine. They last forever. So, like I said, those little guys are around to carry your stuff back and forth for you. And I do recommend you use them. Because, look, if you're carrying three or four pineapples or five or six melons or a couple watermelons, take it from me, you will be miserable. You tote that around for a while, it'll put a nasty groove in your shoulders. It happened to me when I first started shopping at these places, and it'll happen to you too. So do hire a porter. So how do they do it so easily when you can't? Well, they're used to it for one thing, and it's not that you can't, but you'll suffer. And besides, they've got that little sponge pad thing, and you don't. So what's that for? Well, that's what they put on their forehead when they've got a really, really heavy package or two. They wrap the rope around the heavy bag and forehead. They stoop forward and actually use their head to counterbalance all that weight. And man, it looks weird, even painful. But they do it, and that's life for them. It's a job, you know? In fact, if you're watching YouTube right now, you'll see one of those little guys hauling a 100-pound tank of propane gas using the forehead method. And remember, a 100-pound tank of gas weighs about 135 pounds because it's 100 pounds, not counting the metal tank itself. So these little guys routinely carry more than their own body weight. Try that sometime and see how far you get. Anyway, like I said, they'll come walking up to you and say, ¿Lleva sus cosas? And you'll say yes, and that's when you make the deal with them. Now, of course, we're way off the Gringo Tourist Trail, so these guys don't know a word of English. And you'll say, ¿Cuánto? Which means how much, or ¿Cuánto cuesta? Which means what's it going to cost? And 9 out of 10 times, the guy will say, whatever you want to pay me, como le gusta. But you see, that's not a good answer. That won't work, because I found out if you leave it at that after you've made your big walk through the market and probably have gone back to the parking lot two or three times to load up your trunk. Now remember, I'm talking about shopping for a couple of weeks at a time now. Chances are you'll be working the guy more than he's used to. Oh, and on that subject, make sure when you pick out papayas and melons and avocados, you hand select them for that 2 or 3 week period. Because you see, if you let the person you're buying the produce from select the stuff, they'll pick out some very nice stuff for you, but chances are it'll ripen on the same day or nearly so, and you don't want that. I mean, how would you like 4 honeydew melons and 8 avocados come and due on the same day? That will happen if you let the seller at the little kiosk pick your fruit for you. Of course, that's not an issue or a problem if you shop every day or so like most Latins do. Then you just pick what's ripe at the moment. Now, maybe if you too live within walking distance of one of those big markets, you can go down every couple days and pick your stuff like the Latins do. Ripe and ready. But if you only do it a couple times a month, like me, you'll want to stagger the ripeness factor. When you get down here, you'll figure it out. But at first, I guarantee you'll overbuy and a lot of stuff will go to waste. Now, of course, there are a lot of smaller markets around too. Seems like every neighborhood has one. They've got pretty much everything the big markets have, except the prices are a little higher. Not much, but me, I prefer the big market, even if it's 20 miles away. Why? Because that's where all the action is. Believe me, there's so much action. Besides, at those big markets, they have practically anything and everything you might need in the way of household supplies at any given moment. For example, the other day, I had to get one of those little flat lithium batteries for a bathroom scale. It's a very common little flat battery, 3 volts, called a CR2032. I'm sure you've got a few around the house. So anyway, a couple days before I went to the market, I checked out those batteries at a local strip mall. Anyway, at the little electronics kiosk at the mall, they wanted $6 for one of those batteries. A day later, I was in the city, walked past a Radio Shack. Yes, they still have them down here. And the battery was $10. In the end, I didn't buy one in either of those places. I was in no hurry, just a bathroom scale, and I thought I'd check out the big market. There are always little guys running around trying to sell you watches and batteries and earbuds and phone chargers, that kind of stuff. And I thought I'd wait and check that out. Sure enough, in the big market, I ran into a guy selling batteries right away. And what do you think he wanted for the exact same battery I could buy at a mall or electronics store, ranging from $5 to $10? Well, would you believe $2? Probably could have got him down to $1.50. They do expect you to haggle, you know. And it was a brand name, Maxell, too, in the original package. Not a pirate job at all. So just know that whatever small stuff you can buy in a strip mall, many times they'll have it in the big markets, too, at half price or less. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, we were negotiating with the little porter guy to carry our stuff in the market. And he just said, pay me whatever you feel like paying me. And that's when I usually say, how about 75 cents? That's when they change their tune. 75 cents? Oh, no. And that's when I say, well, you just said, pay me anything you like. Now, don't get me wrong. This guy's not trying to stiff me for what you might call gringo prices because, like I said before, many times in these big markets, you're going to be the only gringo there and probably the only gringo he's ever spoken to in his life. So what happens then? Well, generally, he reluctantly agrees to 75 cents or $1, whatever you've tossed out at him. But here's the catch. Once it's all over and he's done his 2 or 3 loads back to your car, that's when you tip him. You give him a bit more. By the way, at one big market I go to once in a while, there's a guy there who's missing an eye. On top of that, he's got a huge scar on his face. Must have been a bad accident. He's a porter, and I always look to use that guy when he's around. You know, life is tough in a third world as it is, but to have just one eye, well, let's just say when you run into guys like that who are actually working and not begging, you really want to give them a hand. And by the way, you really have to park in a parking lot. There's no way you should park on the streets because, well, anything could happen. Not that you're going to get ripped off or anything, but you could come back and find out the hood of your car is being used as a baby diaper changing station or just kind of a universal lean-to or makeshift sofa. Not to mention, guys with push carts and wheelbarrows and dollies are everywhere. And the fact is, if you're parked on the street, it's just a matter of time before one of those guys bashes your car without so much as an apology, since every car or truck you see parked in those markets is sort of a wreck and has had a million dings and bashes just because it's parked at the market. So what came first, the beater or the egg? Now there's a good t-shirt. Bottom line, if you don't want your car to soon turn into a beater, park in a parking lot. Pay the $1, since that's about what they charge an hour, and your car will be safe and secure the whole time. Kind of. What do I mean by kinda? Do be careful where you park in that parking lot too, because there'll be quite a number of beaters going in and out of that parking lot all day. Meaning, even if you park in a nice open area, with not a single car within 10 feet of you, when you return, there's always a good chance there'll be a beater wedged up nearly against your car. And you'll practically need a shoehorn to slip into the driver's seat. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've returned to a parking spot only to realize that my side view mirror or mirrors has been sprung inward or outward. Meaning either someone with a beater kissed them and sprung them forward or backward, or someone parked so close that people walking through simply pushed the mirrors out of position to slip on through. Yes, it's all about Latin's diminished personal space. Something us gringos and expats just can't get used to. Which is again why I repeat, it's not good to have an expensive or high-end late model car. Unless, of course, you don't care about those things. However, most gringos don't take that advice. And they truly suffer for every new scratch and ding. So anyway, get used to retrieving your car and finding that your mirrors have been popped this way and that. Meanwhile, back at the huge, chaotic outdoor market, just a few days ago, I bought 5 Haas avocados for $1. Now, I don't much know what produce goes for up in the States. I guess it varies all over the place, too. especially when you're talking about pre-digested food outlets and just-in-time supermarkets like Walmart, versus mom-and-pop corner stores, if there are any left, and organic farmers markets I know a lot of you take advantage of. However, just yesterday I was talking to a young lady who came down to one of my expat insider seminars a while back, and she's back down again on her own, getting her plan B together. I asked her about produce prices in Texas, where she's from. She said two Haas avocados are around $2.50 in Texas. Now, you probably know the Haas variety are the most expensive type and are shaped like a pear. Now, I don't know about up in the States, but down here in Latin America, there are many other different kinds of avocados, most of them perfectly round, that are much cheaper and less tasty than Haas. Yes, down here they even have avocado trees growing wild. So anyway, Lori says in Texas, a Haas avocado is around $1.25. Again, you heard me right. At the local market, I bought five for $1. However, note that you could drive just a couple of miles away to a Walmart and pay around 50 or 60 cents apiece for them. Still, half of what you'd pay in Texas, but you can see why it's a huge advantage if you can come down and shop at these big outdoor markets. Believe me, there's nothing like it, and it's a lot of fun, too. And be sure to bring your camera. They don't mind if you take pictures. In fact, they love gringos. You will see things in that market that you'll never see up north. Crazy, chaotic, and wonderful things, too. Nope, don't worry. Nothing dangerous about those markets at all. Even though there's 1,000 people walking around and you're the only gringo, which is often the case off the gringo tourist trail. However, the first few times you go to one of these things, you will feel like you're in a goldfish bowl. So you'll probably feel more comfortable if you bring someone along. So what else did I get? Well, two big honeydew melons for $1. As well as 10 of the best tangerines I have ever eaten too, for $1. Now down here they don't call them tangerines, they call them mandarinas. Mandarinas. Sounds like mandarin orange, but they're not. And you know they're one of the best traveling fruits that there is. So if you're in the car or just walking around, you can just peel them with your fingers. The outside peels right away with ease. You don't need a knife, and it's not at all like fighting it out with an orange. Forget about oranges when you're on the road. They're way too messy. You don't want some sugary fruit to be dripping on your fingers or your clothes when you're traveling. That's not a good look or feel. We've all been there, right? And it's no fun. Which is why they invented wipies, another great traveling aid. So for me, my favorite three traveling fruits are, number one, mandarinas. Number two, liches, which some people call rambutan, which look like little red hairy testicles. You can pop the fruit right out of its little hairy container with ease without spilling a drop of juice. And my number three traveling fruit, a papaya. Though to work that out on the road, you'll need a metal spoon. So you buy a small papaya. When you're ready to eat it, cut it in half. And you treat each half of the papaya like a fruit cup. You'll take your spoon, scoop the seeds out, hold the papaya like a cup, and start eating it from the inside out. Easy as that. Other great, filling, healthy, non-messy foods when you're on the road? Nuts of all kinds, and you can get those at all the big markets too. And do try the many, many different varieties of nuts that you've never come across before either. And here's something else that's very worthwhile. You go to the big market, you buy 2 or 3 pounds of shelled, unsalted peanuts for $1 a pound or less. Take them home, put them in a strainer, agitate them a bit, wash them pretty good, take a clean bath towel, spread them out, put them in the sun. Indoors, of course, so the bugs aren't tempted. After a couple hours, they're bone dry, ready to go in the food blender. And I recommend you get a Cuisinart or KitchenAid, one of the big, tough models, with a big-ass motor, so you won't fry it. Don't get a cheap, flimsy plastic one like an Oster or a Black & Decker, though I'm sure they have some high-end models. I haven't seen any yet down here, anyway. So you throw those peanuts in a heavy-duty food processor, and in no time, you have your own homemade, all-natural peanut butter. No additives, no preservatives, no sugar, no salt. So you listeners out there who need that special organic peanut butter from the States that costs $10 a pound, well, come on down and make your own. It takes all of about 20 minutes. Sure, if you're like me, the kitchen and the food processor is kind of a mess after that, but that's what maids and cleaning ladies are for, right? What? You say you don't have one? Is that right? Well, come on down. But where were we? Oh yeah, shopping at the market. What else did I get? Well, 5 big sweet potatoes for 60 cents, each one bigger than my fist. Oh yeah, and get this. Everyone loves cinnamon, right? It's supposed to be really good for you. Take a little bit of it every day myself. Bought a pound of powdered cinnamon for $2.50. Sure, you can buy it in stick form too. There's always little guys walking around holding a bunch of sticks wrapped in twine or paper, which I guess are good for tea and other hot drinks, but give me the powder anytime. So I'm looking up cinnamon on the internet now, and it looks like you can get it cheapo stuff for about $8 a pound. So down here anyway, about a third of that price. Oh, and pineapples, not giant ones, but good-sized pineapples, three for a buck. Guaranteed the best you'll ever taste, too. Carrots, about a dozen foot-long jobs for 60 cents. Then I picked up 3 pounds of the biggest, freshest strawberries you've ever seen for around 40 cents a pound. Same for blackberries, 40 cents a pound, and they're huge. Now, of course, prices fluctuate quite a bit. They go up and down depending what time of the season it is. So at the beginning of a season, when a certain kind of vegetable or fruit is just trickling in, you might pay twice the price or more compared to if you bought the same thing a few weeks later, when the market gets absolutely saturated with that kind of thing, sometimes for weeks or months on end. It's that good old Adam Smith supply and demand thing, right? Down here they call it oferta y demanda, meaning literally offer and demand. Now, there are some fruits and vegetables that are in season all year round. Remember, there's 4 growing seasons in most of Latin America. Because of the many varieties of certain fruits like tangerines and bananas, when the season is pretty much over for one type, there's always another type or two still in the season overlapping or coming online. Now, while we're at it, let's talk about coconuts for a minute. About 2 weeks ago, I took a nice little trip to the Pacific coast to check out the beachside. Anyway, motoring towards the beach on a big 4-lane highway, around 20 minutes from our beachfront destination, and it's hot. I mean, we're not in the Altiplano anymore. All of a sudden, right out in the middle of nowhere, all sorts of little vegetable and fruit stands start popping up all over the place. Bananas, plátanos, watermelons, and yes, coconuts. And I mean each of these stands had hundreds of coconuts piled up all over the place. Now, if you've never had a nice, cold, fresh coconut water right out of the coconut, well, that's a treat. It really hits the spot. And when you buy them at a roadside stand where the coconuts are right alongside you, in fact, every once in a while, you actually hear one crashing to the ground somewhere nearby. Man, that's fresh. So I pulled over and asked him, how much for a nice cold coconut? And the guy said, 25 cents. And he stuck his hand in an old beat-up Coleman cooler and pulled one out. And that old dented-up cooler, that was right out of the 50s. Pure aluminum. They don't make them like that anymore. And I said, 25 cents, huh? Thinking about how many I wanted. And apparently, he must have taken my hesitation for thinking maybe they were too expensive. Then he said, if you want coconut water that's not cold, you know, room temperature, which is probably 95 on the coast, he said, I can give you 2 for 25 cents. But there's nothing like a cold one, so I bought a few. Okay, flash ahead 20 minutes, and now I'm maybe about a mile from the beach, and the roadside fruit stands, along with the piles of coconuts, are getting thick and heavy. So I pulled over to one of them and said, how much for a cold coconut? And the guy said, 50 cents. And a room temperature one, 25 cents. Suddenly, prices have doubled. Moving towards the beach where the sun and fun and the action is, and suddenly prices are up. Flash forward another half hour. I'm at a restaurant right on the beach. Ordered a coconut water with lunch. And there, typically, you could see clearly in the back room a young lady with a 2.5-foot-long machete lopping off the tops of coconuts dead flat with one blow. What a pro. Always a sight to see. You never get tired of that. Especially when it's a lady in a dress and high heels suddenly whipping out the machete and cutting it up to make coconut water for you. I've seen that. In fact, if you're watching the YouTube, you're probably going to see that picture right now. So what next? Well, then the next night, off to a restaurant owned by a gringo right on the beach. Had another coconut water. The cost? This time, $3. So then, what's the markup on coconuts in Latin America? Well, if you live at sea level or on the coast, they're dropping off the trees all over, and they're free for the locals living around there, most of the year anyway. However, if you're actually in the business of selling coconuts, as you've seen, they go anywhere from 12 cents to $2.50, in my examples anyway. Again, I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail. When on the gringo tourist trail, however, like for example in Playa del Carmen, Cancun, Costa Rica, even the resorts of the Dominican Republic, I remember seeing cold coconut water in the coconut for $5 or more. Even little guys strolling down the streets with their wheelbarrows full of coconuts, selling them for $5 a crack. Meanwhile, off the gringo tourist trail, you could get 50 coconuts for that price. However, Latins have learned the big money's where the gringos hang, right? So again, it's all about what the market will bear. Yep, supply and demand. And when the Latins have the supply and the demand is coming from gringos, well, that's where the real money is for the locals. Oferta demanda is what they call it here, remember? Oh, and related to that, you've probably heard me mention a few times in previous shows that this is a bartering and bargaining society. Latin businessmen expect a little haggling to go down before they make a final deal. However, as the gringos have moved in with their first world franchises, you'll find there's less and less haggling the more gringoized an area is. So when you're on the gringo tourist trail, there'll be much less haggling. Mostly because gringos are almost always prepared to pay the sticker price except when at a rummage sale, an auction, or buying something used. So while haggling is absolutely alive and well in those big chaotic produce markets and most every other retail shop that's off the tourist trail and off the books, and we're talking about 20 to 40% of the Latin economy here. Meanwhile, when you're talking about businesses that are on the books, that is, they give out legitimate receipts and pay taxes, etc., those businesses are slowly but surely less inclined to haggle with you. However, if it's a mom-and-pop shop and mom or papa around, you can almost always cut a deal with them. Whereas if you're just dealing with the hired help and mom and pop aren't there, they'll be much less flexible because they don't have the power to do the haggling. But wait a minute, we were talking about coconuts, weren't we? All right. Well, there is kind of bad news in the coconut world. Just recently, it says here in a New York Times article that coconut water and coconut oil prices have soared 20% in just the last month, largely because of the growing popularity of specialty products produced from coconuts, such as coconut water and coconut oil. And here's an excerpt from an article that came out just yesterday. It says, from coconut water to Starbucks drinks, the U.S. is having a love affair with coconuts like never before. All Market Incorporated, which owns Vita Coco, estimates that the U.S. market for coconut oil and cocoa water is $1.2 billion a year, expected to be double that by 2020. However, even now, there are not enough coconuts to meet the demand. By the way, the Philippines is the world's biggest coconut supplier now. So as the Caribbean runs out of coconuts, so are other coconut-producing parts of the world. For example, Vilma da Silva, who has been exporting coconuts from Guyana, South America, has seen this firsthand. She says, "We want to get into international markets and export, but we just don't have enough coconut farms to buy from." Okay, that's the gist of it. Now, you've heard me talk about coconuts for a long, long time, and that off the gringo tourist trail anyway, many of them just drop off the trees and lay on the ground and rot. For the longest time, I just didn't get why some enterprising gringo just didn't get a small business going doing the coconut water and coconut oil thing. Sure, it would take time and effort, but it seems like a no-brainer. Even more so now that there's a confirmed coconut shortage worldwide. However, recently on my trip to the Pacific, I ran into a bunch of gringos hanging around the beach bars. Five new expats living off the gringo tourist trail for 2 or 3 years now and loving it. And believe it or not, all they had on their minds, business-wise, was to open a bar, restaurant, or a B&B, the usual suspects. And when I mentioned the coconut oil and coconut water business to them, all of them said pretty much the same thing. Johnny, too much work? They'd have to learn about the process and coconuts. They'd have to organize people and buy equipment. Man, they had a million excuses. The fact is, they were young guys in their late 20s. They just wanted to sit back and party and have a business that kicked out some cash with little or no effort. Well, don't we all want to have that, huh? Anyway, they came up with a big list of negatives. But most of all, they just thought it was too much work. Oh, they all agreed there's money to be made, but here's the thing. None of these guys seemed all that serious about doing anything at all. In fact, I kind of wondered how they came down and did the expat thing in the first place. Not to mention, they all had nice, expensive Apple gadgets and cool, hip, expensive beach paraphernalia and a nice late model 4x4 Jeep. How about that? I could only think they were IT guys, maybe, because you never can tell with them. Or maybe it was mommy and daddy back home financing their little expeditions. To me, these guys seemed a little bit out of place. They belong more on the gringo tourist trail, where the party action is, like Costa Rica, Cancun, etc. Then, after a while, finally they admitted they ended up off the gringo tourist trail by mistake. They were surfers. And some of the best surfing in Latin America is on the Pacific side in tiny little one-horse beach towns way off the tourist trail. And lo and behold, after some months they discovered the gringo advantage. Of course, they didn't know what to call it, and when they started talking about this and that, I said, that's the gringo advantage. They said, yeah, that's right. So they never left. So in the end, you can't blame them for following their dream. They want to have some kind of a beach bar that would be linked in with surfing. Hey, you know, whatever works for you, right? Meanwhile, the coconuts are falling everywhere. They're rotting alongside the road. And when I want coconut oil, I go to Costco and buy a few jars. A product that comes from the Philippines, processed there, sent to Costco in the States, and then shipped down to Latin America. Now, if that isn't ass backwards, I don't know what is. By the way, I've met a few gringos over the years down here who don't like air conditioning. At least they say they don't. In fact, two of those gringo surfers were such guys. Then again, I've met a few expat gringos here and there that don't bathe regularly either. That often can happen when a gringo goes native. And my nose told me that at least two of those guys were well on their way. And generally, when gringos go native, they're not motivated to do much of anything but hang around the beach, drink, party, hook up with a native girl, and have a brood of kids. So yes, a kind of gringo white trash does exist down here in Latin America. Usually in the form of a middle-class gringo who came down in his mid to late 20s. And after finding he could get by on almost nothing, with the booze and the drugs being ridiculously cheap too, well, that's what you call going native. Alright, we're near the end of the show now, and I'd just like to mention once again that I do get emails all the time from people saying they'd love to come to my Expat Insider Seminar, but they haven't got the time or the money. Not yet, anyway. And of course, I understand that. Times are tough for a lot of people up north and getting worse. But that doesn't mean you can't get started on your Plan B, which is why you really have to check out my new Expat Essentials course. It's an excellent way to get your Plan B started if you just can't come down and get boots on the ground yourself. In the course, I talk about a lot of things I just don't talk about on the show. So it really is the next best thing to coming down to the seminar yourself. And to get you started, I've got three free videos for you. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. Check it out, and I'm sure you'll like it. That's www.expatplanb.com. And for those of you who can make it down to my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link at the top of the page. We're 3/4 filled already, so there are still some spots available. Finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. That's YouTube/TheExpatFiles, all one word. See the slides and photos and all the fun stuff that goes along with the show. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.